This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Eun Teik. Fortify Rights, a non-profit human rights organization based in Bangkok, recently released a report documenting how students' political participation on university campuses have been stifled for almost 50 years. The report is titled No Politics on Campus, and I have lead author Henry Koh here with me in the studio to tell me more. Henry, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Antek.
So this report focuses on the Universities and University Colleges Act 1971, or AUKU, its Malay acronym. Perhaps I can get you to start there. How did this act come to be, and what was the original intention for having a law like this?
At a time before the law was conceived itself, we were witnessing a time where student activism was at its height, it was at its peak and heydays around the region, not just in Malaysia. And you actually see the formations of student unions across countries in Southeast Asia. And it is also a time where certain countries in the region were just gained independence at the time, right, for less than two decades. So new higher learning institutions were up and coming, and student unions were formed. I'm just going to zoom in to give an example on individuals like Sanusi Osman, Syed Hamid Ali, Dr. M.K. Jayakumar, and Dr. Kim Hong. So these were the founders of the University of Malaya Student Union back then. And at that time, back in the late 60s, they have already started organizing big rallies, protests around the countries, right? And also working together to mobilize the support of students throughout the countries in other universities as well. And when that actually happened, I think the government has been observing the trajectory of where is this going. But back then, what motivated them was mostly based on students' welfare issues, not so much on the political activism yet. But then come the general election in 1969, where we know that there was racial riots happened on May 13, and Syed Hamid Ali was basically used against by the former government as a poster child of being a communist, right? Especially when he was seen carrying the dead body of a Chinese boy, Lim Sun Sing, from the Labour Party, who was shot dead by the police while he was putting out posters in Kajang. And so the former government really use him to relate him as a dissident to the government and as a communist. And eerily speaking, we also see the same culture that is being done by the former regime. And it's just in the past 2 years where student activists have told me that their pictures were used during orientation weeks in the public universities over here, basically warning freshmen or first-year students that they shouldn't act in accordance to what these people are actually doing. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you would end up like them, being disciplined. Just to give a very stark example, so we have this chat group on WhatsApp where I communicate regularly with the student activists. Most of them are the students that we have profiled and documented in the report. And when news broke out that former Prime Minister Najib was arrested yesterday, and, you know, I thought of texting them and like, hey, this just happened. And less than 2 years ago, the entire movement of hashtag Tangkap MO1, it was started by you folks, right? Ani Shafika, the spokesperson of the Tangkap MO1 coalition back then, the idea that came about to them was when the US DOJ lawsuit broke out. WSJ reported that billions of funds were stolen and plundered. And the students just thought that they had to do something, right? So they bravely set up a coalition with four other IPTAs in the country, and Anis being the spokesperson, mobilized a rally in Jalan Hang Tuah. So that got them into trouble, not just with the universities, but they were also investigated under the Penal Code and the Peaceful Assembly Act as well by the PDRM back then. And then I think they also feel a little bit poignant of the fact of feeling surreal, first of all, and not thinking that this would actually come to fruition one day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we started joking to talk about hashtag Tangkap MO1, Akhirnya Terlatih Tangkap, right? So, and they started the hashtag of MO1 Ditangkap started trending yesterday, and it was started by them. then they are really believing in the fact that the purported democracy that has failed them so many years, or rather, I dare say, the entire generation in Malaysia, is finally proving its point again, right? That the fundamental freedoms are that are supposed to be given to them is now being proven, is now being seen by the students themselves. So, yeah, we do see similarities, even for what is happening now and what happened back in the 60s. So, sorry to go so far,
no.
But so in 71, I think government was highly threatened, government power back then, right, was highly threatened under the purview of Tunku Abdul Razak. And they thought that by setting up a National Security Council to look into the Education Ordinance and to set up an act like AUKU, it might give them a little bit of control over university autonomy. But what happened was in subsequent amendments, such as the one in 1975, it sees university starting to put punitive punishments such as jail time and monetary fines up to 1,000 Malaysian dollars, they used to call it back then. It was a lot of money at the students, right? This basically would end a person's future career because the student would be jailed or they will actually be expelled altogether from their studies. And if you do not get an explicit letter from the Ministry of Education back then, you cannot be registered into another public university again. So that was how the Act actually was conceived. And I think for the past 45 years and through interviews that we have done with students across all universities from different majors as well, sad to say that it has a great chilling effect on how their fundamental freedoms to free speech, peaceful assembly and to form association have been, well, successfully repressed by the former regime.
The title of the report, No Politics on Campus, it's a quote that you attributed to former Prime Minister Najib.
That's right.
That it was a compromise in the last amendment that was done to this act. And in the report you wrote as well, between 1975 and 2012, the BN government amended the law 5 times. Each time, did it make it more repressive?
Well, in 71, the original act itself, back then, it was largely based on how it could help the then government set up public universities to allow them to politically appoint vice-chancellors to govern universities. So we do see the erosion of academic freedom right there. Universities do not get or enjoy the kind of autonomy that they used to have. But when it comes to disciplining students for their political dissent, we see greater punishment or harsher gag laws that were put, provisions that were put against them during the 1970s. Amendment. Well, subsequent amendments are very minor amendments. They didn't matter that much. But just to highlight that, I think back in 2008 or 2009, that particular amendment sort of decriminalized AUKU. So students will not get jailed anymore back then. And the monetary fine was then transferred to what they have it as they call the Disciplinary of Student Rules, 1999. And the maximum fine is now standing at 200 ringgit. So the pivotal moment came at 2012 when then Deputy Minister of Higher Education, Dato' Saifuddin Abdullah, which we had an extensive interview for the sake of the report, for the background of the report, who is also now a foreign minister, actually supported the students. And the backstory of how the largest amendment that happened to AUKU back in 2012 happened was during the by-elections in 2010, 4 political science students from UKM, they were monitoring or rather observing a political campaign that was taking in Hulu Selangor. But while doing so, they were surveilled by intelligence, or rather by PDRM, I would say, of participating in political activities outside of campus. But what the students were arguing, and they have successfully argued at a court of appeal, right? And to say they basically took the government and the university to court to argue to say that they were not really involved in politics, but they were rather monitoring the elections as part of their project as political science students. So it was a constitutional challenge against the former government and UKM itself, and they have won. And for me to actually quote in the judgment where Judge Hishamuddin Yunus actually talk about how fundamental freedoms as free speech, peaceful assembly is very crucial to the existence of democracy. So if we do call ourselves as a democracy, as we purport to be, having laws like this to gag students is truly repressive. And to have a dissident in the government back then, like Datuk Saifuddin Abdullah, he backed the students and he fought for them in parliament as well as to lobby to former Prime Minister Najib, as what he told us. So in agreeing to amend the law back then, former Prime Minister Najib told him in a private meeting to say that, right, we can do this, but with a caveat, with a compromise of no politics in campus, meaning that now students are free to join societies or even participate in political activities outside the campus, but they are still not allowed to freely speak out their thoughts on political ideologies in the campus itself.
So you can be a political party member outside, but not do any party activities on campus or speak about any, conduct any political forums on campus.
That is right. Yeah, but students are still being punished for the political activities outside of campus, as we see with the Tangkap M1 rally, with the Bursi rally, for example. And this is largely because there is still a legal loophole right now that is formed by a bylaw as a product of AUKU, which is the Unified Disciplinary of Student Rules in all universities. And in part two of that rule itself, when you talk about general discipline of universities, for example, in rule number 3, it talks about students will still be punished if they do something that is against the interests or well-being of the university. And this is very problematic because such vague wordings will allow the universities to conclude and judge for themselves what is good or what is bad to the good name of the universities.
We'll take a short break and come back and discuss more about the constitutional challenge as well as what having a new government entails for this struggle to repeal AUKU means. I'm speaking today to Henry Koh, lead author of No Politics on Campus, a report by 45 Rights. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're listening to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Antik. With me today in the studio is Henry Koh, lead author of No Politics on Campus. You started this project in 2016.
That's right.
I don't know whether you were prescient enough at the time to know that maybe the change in government was happening, but did it change how you want to move forward this advocacy because we are in this new environment?
Well, I would always tell people that what activists believe in is when there is a fighting voice, whenever there is struggle, it means that there is hope at a particular place and time. Do we actually envisage or actually know that what would actually happen in GE14? Not at all. And when we started out this project, we had a lot of security measures put in place, knowing that by exposing such a thing, you would open a so-called Pandora box into looking into things that which are unpleasant, right? And this brings us to the fact that we, through certain sources and during the research project itself, we have evidence that showed both the PDRM and the former Minister of Higher Education, the Ministry, issuing explicit orders or letters to university authorities to take disciplinary actions against students for their activities off campus, as I've explained earlier. Mm. So to us, this was...
Can I just stop you there?
Sure.
Are those actions illegal because they're doing it in accordance to AUKU?
Well, the police themselves, in the letter... It actually said that they have there is an investigation that is being brought against the students under the Penal Code, the Peaceful Assembly Act, and then the letter from the Ministry of Higher Education to the universities, it talk about how they think that the students have done something that is wrong in AUKU as well as the disciplinary rules, and to then pressure the university authorities to take appropriate actions against them. So we thought that that was a really serious breach of privacy, and it is a state-sponsored type of surveillance, right, audit to systematically control the students' activities. And I think this is very disturbing because as students, as students in universities, they are all considered to be adults, and they should be autonomous and to be equal on equal footing as anyone or of us to enjoy the fundamental freedoms which are given to us and protected under the Malaysian Federal Constitution. But here we are saying that as long as you are a student in a public university in Malaysia, you need to endure these things, right? When we are, I think some of us are still in a surreal mode of trying to adjust on what is happening. And I do believe that the Pakatan government is also trying to adjust themselves too. Everyone is elated, everyone is happy. And I think until the wee hours of May 10, a lot of us really do not expect that this historic change would actually take place. And that totally changed the entire trajectory of our advocacy moving forward as well to strengthen what we are trying to change, not just by amending or repealing our coup, right? And allow me to just point out very vividly in the Pakatan Harapan Manifesto, in Promise 27, when it talks about abolishing oppressive laws. So one of the laws in the list is actually our coup, and it is also repeated in the second and third time in Promise number 28 and number 50 as well. And in Promise number 50, talk about when a law such as AUKU is being repealed, a reform is going to take place also in the higher education system in Malaysia. And speaking from a purely legal point of view, repealing or amending a law is a very simple procedure. It's very technical. It's something that lawmakers or parliamentarians can put forward in parliamentary sessions. But what we are more concerned right now is for the government to properly consult with certain stakeholders, especially students, and to understand what do students want, what do they want, and what do they think academic freedom and university autonomy should be before they lay out their reformative action plans in all our IPTAs, in our universities. So I think right now the Ministry of Education has a role to play in consulting the students themselves with civil society and even with Suhakam, with the Human Rights Commission of Malaysia, to properly talk about how they can reform our higher institution, higher education system to be a better environment for students where their fundamental rights are not being repressed, and also to invite a body like Suhakam to observe or to start up an inquiry where complaints or reports of irregularities during disciplinary proceedings against students do happen in universities.
What do you make of Education Minister Dr. Mazli's call for current vice-chancellors who were appointed maybe politically, to resign honourably, using his words, before they are made to resign? I'm just concerned because if they are asked to resign voluntarily, wouldn't the current government put in place VCs who are then sympathetic to Pakatan and then perpetuate this system where they are favourable to the current government?
That is a good question. Two very important points to point out. So right now, these student activists that we have documented, they are also setting up a larger movement among themselves as well to start up this thing called Gerakan Bertindak Mahasiswa, and basically the students' movement to abolish AUKU, abolishing not in terms of law, but an overhaul change in the entire higher education system. And to them, the removal of former political appointees such as VCs in university is very pertinent to what they want of the government. And in this whole student manifesto that they are currently preparing to hand over to the Ministry of Education. And what I think Dr. Mazli said is something more of a courteous reminder. And in other democracies elsewhere, these things are often reminded towards political appointees, or rather even to ministers or politicians whom the government or the people think are not really doing their job right. And I think this is a form of ministerial responsibility as well as a whole. And I think that these former political appointees, and if in their own right, if they do know that they have already done something that was purely biased towards student activists or student leaders just because of their political dissent, I think they should take the step to actually resign. But the crucial point over here is on having a real task force set up independently to, well, elect or appoint capable vice-chancellors for our public universities. And, of course, we do not want the same system to repeat where sympathisers to the Pakatan Harapan government, even our political appointees, to take the helm of university leaderships.
So I want to just turn the attention to the cover of your report, which I think is a picture of
Ashik?
Yes, Ashik Ali in front of Parliament.
That's
demanding
right.
for the repeal of AUKU. And in this report, you profiled many student activists. You mentioned Anis Shafida before this as well. Perhaps I can get you to tell me a little bit about their background and why they feel so strongly about this. You know, you also said earlier that there's a chilling effect with this law. At orientations, freshmen are reminded not to indulge in subversive activities. Why do they continue to do this or speak up in the face of threats, of expulsion, and what did their family and friends thought of this?
Well, to first draw a comparison on analysis on interviews that we have done with 60 over odd students for this report, and also looking back into some historical documents on interviews that I've done before with student leaders like Syed Hamid Ali, Sanusi Osman, and Dr. Kim Hong, and people like them back in the 60s, you do find a common point of view where they do not ask for this to actually happen. Where it all began is when they fervently believe in something or a value that they hold very strongly upon, right? For example, back then, the UM Student Union, what first got Syed Hamid Ali into trouble was when he spoke up and rallied against the so-called mini-corruptions or mini-Napoleons controlling universities back then, where student councillors were trying to cheat proprietors in universities in University of Malaya. And then talking about how Ashik, as a first-year law student in UKM, he got his first ordeal with AUKU, and where he was kicked out of from his residential college for talking about things like irregular water supply in their campuses. I think this is something that they hold very closely upon, and when they feel that the system is actually going against them, and I think that the natural rage, not just in them but in any of us, we would feel that injustice is being done, and we are seeing that, and these people are seeing that too, that is happening to them. So I think this gives them the courage and the tenacity to continue to fight for what they believe in and their causes as well.
So among peers, are they seen as troublemakers or outliers, or do they command a lot of silent support among staff and students?
Based on the interviews that we have done, sad to say, majority of students do see them as troublemakers, and they do think that they will not want to be in their shoes to be involved. And when you speak to lecturers as well, and they do think that people like Anis Ashik Liang, they are very courageous students, and they only account to the so-called one percenters, right, or of the entire university students' demographic. But I do think that to have people like them to continue to speak out, and all those facing the charges and adversities that they have gone through, it is important, because then they will also create another effect to oppose a system that is putting them in right now, that is going against them. So talking about a cover photo, for example, this is a moment before the general election, and it was on 27th of March this year. I still remember that morning when I drove to Parliament. It was raining heavily, and I was persistent not to set up my car. And when I texted a student, I'm like, is this still happening? I do see that the barricade of PDRM was there. And they're like, yes, of course, we are there. And they're all ready, and I salute them. I have to give it to them that I was coming down with an umbrella and things, but they were all braving the rain. They were all wet, and they were just wanting their voices to be heard. And they thought, what is so wrong for us to march peacefully to hand in the students' manifesto to both the government and the former opposition leaders back then, of what the students want, what do they want of the new government that is going to come into power. So after a few hours of not successfully going past through the barricade, albeit having discussed and negotiated with the police. And I think back then, MP Stephen Sim actually came out and greeted the students. So to actually got the students' manifesto from them and promised them to say that he's going to bring four representatives among them to go into Parliament and to have a meeting with Wan Azizah back then, right? Dr. Wan Azizah back then. But one thing that really made me happy while monitoring that particular rally outside the Parliament, whom the students call it the Students' Movement to Abolish Aoku, is the fact that I see a lot of new faces. So I think there are around 20 to 30 of them. And apart from people like Ashik, Anis, Suhail, and Lee Young were there, and the rest of them, they were all new faces. They were all new student activists or leaders. And of course, I interviewed them, and they did tell me that they were encouraged to join them and to risk being disciplined by the universities because they do think that they have a role to play, and they are highly encouraged by these student activists too.
Do they feel like they have been supported by family or civil society? For instance, the UKM4, right? They were in a protracted legal battle that went up to the superior courts. Did they feel like they have the resources of the public backing them when they were going through those challenges?
I think this is the first successful challenge against Aoku. Well, referring to the 2010 constitutional challenge by the four UKM political science students, it is successful in a sense where the our judiciary system has never before put in such explicit words to protect the fundamental freedoms of Malaysians, and in this term to also affirm that as students, as public university students, they do also enjoy the rights given to them as per our federal constitution too. Well, in particular in Article 10, sub 1, which I think it beautifully encompasses all three fundamental freedoms, right? To free speech, peaceful assembly, and to form association, where Judge Hishamuddin Yunus thinks that universities should be a breeding ground for reformers and thinkers, and it is not supposed to be a place to repress them. But talking about family support and having the support from the public as well, moral support from the public, I can't speak on behalf of the UKM4 students, but with the students that we have documented, some of them do not see that there are support coming from their family members, and it is also understandable in that sense because they're worried for them. And like I said, this is because laws such as Aoku, gag laws such as Aoku, has created a chilling effect to the entire nation as well. It hurts the nation, it hurts the mentality of the entire country. It has instilled a culture of fear, not just in universities, but also, I think, to Malaysians, to the Malaysian public at large. Because I think, bear in mind, as it still stands over here now, apart from laws like Aoku, we still have a range of oppressive laws that need to seriously be reformed so that this culture of fear will be eradicated once and for all for good, that we can confidently say that Malaysia is a true democracy at last. But having support from civil society, from NGOs, and from also lawyers who are taking up their cases pro bono, we definitely do see these, minority support, but they do give a huge encouragement for students to continue their activism, for them to continue to believe in the things that they're standing up for.
Right. So you concluded this report by saying that you'd like to submit a few recommendations to the education minister. Have you had a chance to meet him or set up a meeting with him?
Well, we tried to set up a meeting with Dr. Marsley or his office, but unfortunately, to date, we have not heard from them yet. But definitely, we think what is the next step is that we are going to have a consultative meeting with the students, because we think it is important to understand what the students want for themselves, right? And this is also a step towards self-governance, but of course, in a good and regulated way as well. And we will support the students' movement to propose or put forth their manifesto and their demands to the government as well as to the Ministry of Education. And on our side, we will continue to engage with stakeholders in the government as well as experts that could actually help us and the students to better understand what would be a better and more holistic system in the reform agenda in the higher education system. Mm-hmm. And we will soon also be putting out an open letter to the Minister of Education should we not have a meeting with him to discuss with him what might be the possible steps or advocacy efforts that we can actually work together.
Do you reckon universities would be more receptive to your message now, or to the students' message? Do you think there's a chance that they might act independently of the government in taking up these initiatives?
We definitely hope so. We definitely hope like a report like No Politics on Campus do serve as a good reminder as well to university authorities and its administrators to understand that these things have been happening in our nation for the past few decades. And I think they ought to also support the students in their demands on how universities should be autonomous as well. Because I think at the end of the day, it benefits public universities too, because all universities in this country, they want to continue to elevate their statuses, right, to become a world-ranking universities. And by a good reform, by allowing the students to finally speak up their mind and to have their rightful fundamental freedoms returned to them, this will then help universities in Malaysia to be a more progressive atmosphere and environment for the next generation to come.
Thank you again for taking the time to speak to me today.
Thank you for having me.
That was Henry Koh, lead author of No Politics on Campus from Fortify Rights. You've been listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.